Okay, so we are joined in the studio now by Stefan Gsenger and Sandra Prüfer from Germany's fledgling Parents of Future movement. And I can already see that you take this very seriously because you, Stefan, have brought a bicycle helmet. You came in by bike today, right?
Yes, I come. I go to work every day by bike as long as I'm working here in Bonn.
Okay. Stefan, perhaps if we start with you, can you give us an inclination or an idea just how this movement got started and just how big is it? I mean, I don't think many people have heard of Parents for Future yet.
In Bonn, it started actually quite late. I think the first meeting was held in April. I attended the first meeting in June. Mm-hmm. But it's already a quite well-organized group of people, although there's no formal organization.
How many are you?
I just checked there's a WhatsApp group which has now close to 80 members. But that's, of course, not the...
In Bonn.
Everyone, that's in Bonn only, yes.
Hmm? Okay.
And on a national level, do you have any idea?
It's certainly thousands, tens of thousands of people who are actively part of that, see themselves as part of it. And, of course, you have, in addition, all these people who are not joining such meetings, but they join demonstrations, etc.
Mm-hmm. Sandra, why did you join Parents for Future?
Well, I'm a mother of two. My son Colin is 14 years old and my daughter 17. And on a professional level, I'm informed about the science and the evidence. I lived in Alaska, so like the frontier of climate change, but I also traveled to India and Africa. So you see the effects, and it's much worse than we thought, and it's accelerating. Insects are disappearing. Yep. So it's becoming kind of like overwhelming. You think, okay, what kind of earth are we leaving behind, the future for our children?
You are both parents. You've both got two kids. Sandra, your kids are teenagers, 14 and 17 years old. Stefan, your kids are younger. They're 4 and 6. How open are you with them, you know, about all this really terrible environment news that we're getting and what's in store for humanity if we don't really change things quickly? Because it's quite scary for young kids, isn't it, the topic?
Yeah, that's true. But I'd say, I mean, the four-year-old doesn't really understand that much yet. Six-year-old, we really start talking about these matters. And we have, I mean, give you an example where we talk without kind of trying to impose anything to him. We have a plug-in hybrid car. So the car usually goes electric in the city. And but sometimes the machine starts, you hear the noise. And of course, we do this for environmental reasons. We explain to the children that it's good because there's no bad air coming out when we drive electric. So because, of course, they notice other cars don't have that. Mm-hmm. But both of them are now very sensitive. Whenever the engine starts, they ask me why. And they really don't like it. So this is how you start having the discussion without really trying to tell them or prevent any discussion for them. It's a daily discussion that we have. And the big one is now, I don't know where exactly it comes from, but he really has already some awareness about environmental matters. And of course, climate change is a bit more complex, but now he also starts talking about that. And he certainly doesn't understand why people are burning coal to produce energy, because he knows that you could also do it with a wind turbine. So why would you create such dirty air? And that's no need for it.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to jump in right here. Your six-year-old is concerned about burning coal?
He is, yes. Because he, of course...
Where did he get that from, Dad?
That's not so much... No. I would say that's from me. Of course, he got some information about these demonstrations against coal. And just tell him, yeah, there are people who don't want that. And then he understands it, because it's not so difficult to understand for him. Also show him just this brown coal mine. Like, it's terrible, not far from here. And he sees that all the trees have been destroyed. You don't need to explain the child. He sees that right away. And he also knows that you can do it in a different way.
Sandra, just quick, your children are far older.
Right. My
14.
Son... Colin, he's 14, and my daughter, she's 17.
Are they active?
Yeah, especially my daughter. Yeah, she calls herself also eco-feminist. And
are you proud of that? That she's really into this?
Yeah, I am. But it's not really that... Yeah, she also kind of challenging me, myself. Yes, for example, she did this plastic fasting. She became vegetarian on and off. So, I mean, I'm also changing my behavior in a certain way.
Are you concerned that she might be going too far?
No. Yeah, I mean, I think also the youth, they have to find their own way of expressing themselves, and they're very creative, and I'm very proud of this. I mean, it's
one of the accusations that some critics have leveled at the Fridays for Future movement and at these kids, you know, skipping school to go out on the streets and protest for the climate, is that these kids are being indoctrinated, or that it's parents or adults, parties,
society
behind these kids pushing them in a certain direction. What do you say to that sort of criticism? Is that valid?
I don't think so. The Fridays for Future group, that people that are engaged, they're really aware of this, that, you know, political parties or environmental groups, they're trying to, you know, jump on the wagon and use their brand name, but they're very much self-aware.
Gabe and I, we've got this new podcast going. It's an environmental podcast, which is one of the reasons why we're doing an environmental-themed WorldLink show this week. And we went to a Fridays for Future protest, our very first one, and we were initially quite skeptical of this movement because we thought it was just a bunch of kids who wanted to skip school and, you know, have a day off, have fun, have a laugh. So we didn't really take it that seriously when we went there. It changed completely after we talked to the kids at the demonstration. And there was one kid, she's about the same age as your daughter, Sandra. She was called Hannah Gephardt. And we'd just like to play a short clip to you from that interview.
I wasn't born even when the whole thing about the climate crisis started. So it was not my decision to start, I don't know, burning coal and something like that. It was not in my hands, but it's affecting my future. So it's like the things that generations before us did, and we have to stand now in the mess they made.
How does that make you feel, listening to Hannah's words there?
Yeah, I mean, I had these discussions with my daughter too. We've known this. I mean, this year is the 25th COP climate conference. The 25th. And 30 years ago, scientists were telling us this is happening. We have to do something about it. And it didn't happen.
I really totally respect what this woman has said. Hannah, mm-hmm. Thank you. Because I hear sometimes also young people from the young generation from the Fridays movement are really blaming the old generation. And that is, I think, not only always fair, because we had also in the old generation people older than I am, many who've been fighting against the mess that we in which we are for decades, who've warned long ago. But I think what is really important is that we get out of this trap of this negative narrative, this kind of we have to give up something, because the world I'm dreaming of, it's not a world in which we cannot visit each other anymore, going to Alaska or my wife's from Korea. We have to find a way, and in many parts of our economy, we have already all the tools that we need to live in a way that is not harming our environment. So power sector is very clear. We can get all our power from renewable energy. And that is just important that we are now. That's why this movement is so important, that the politicians take the final decisions, that's not blocked anymore.